This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're doing our usual, toward the end of the year, year-end income tax tips. For those of you who are listening to us live on the program, you'll have a chance to call in with your tax questions if you like. My guest is David Hellman, an attorney who's a specialist in both tax law and estate planning, trusts, and probate law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. He's also a certified public accountant. His offices are in Marin County. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, which certifies the following fields of law: taxation law, appellate law, bankruptcy law, criminal law, estate planning, trust and probate law, family law, franchise and distribution law, immigration and nationality law, workers' compensation law, legal malpractice law, and admiralty and maritime law. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. And David, thank you very much for joining us again.
You're most welcome.
Lovely to have you here. You know, we've never, I don't recall, ever talked about some things that perhaps persons who are thinking of retiring in the near future, whether it's toward the end of this year or maybe in the near future, some of the things they might consider doing to try to help themselves from a tax standpoint.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about that, shall we?
Sure. So if you're employed by a company and you have what's called a traditional retirement plan, which is getting more and more rare just because very few people or companies are doing that anymore. But if you happen to be in an employer that does that, retirement benefits are usually based upon the amount of earnings you've had and the top years of your earnings. So those are things that you need to look at and be sure you know what is available, how much you can put away if there is an elective provision. And you can afford to do
it. When you say put away, what does that mean?
Well, to put into the plan.
I see. Okay.
Usually they will take a portion of your earnings and put it into the plan, and there may be a scale, and you can opt for more, going down to a minimum.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things that are important. You want to look at that, make sure you put as much as you can in so that you maximize what you do get back.
If you do that under this regular plan you're talking about,
right,
the old-time plan, if you do that, is that pre-tax money that you're putting in there, or is that after being taxed?
It depends, but usually it's pre-tax money. And it's the concept also of a 401k at this point, which is not the traditional, but is becoming the norm for retirement plans. So there, to maximize what you're going to be able to get when you do retire, you want to make sure that you elect for the maximum if you can afford that contribution. And that's something to look at.
Do you think that it's important for people who, let's say, are in the next, let's say, not too many years, will be retiring, do you think it's important that they sit down with either a tax lawyer or a CPA or a financial advisor and really try to understand the significance of the issues involved?
I do.
And the numbers?
Yes,
it is
important.
What the future holds, et cetera?
Right. People really need to understand whether they're going to be able to retire comfortably with either their current lifestyle or what adjustment is going to be required. So it is important that people do get that advice to understand where they will be when they do actually retire. In fact, because people have problems with this area sometimes, they elect not to retire at that point where they thought maybe they were going to, and they decide they need to keep working.
Because they have not built up enough
where
they can have a comfortable retirement.
Correct. So
most people, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, most people who are going to have a pension through their employer will also most likely have some Social Security, will they not?
Yes, they normally will, unless they work for a government agency where they don't have that kind of coverage. So it is important to plan this and not just decide one day you're going to retire and hope that the money is enough.
And of course, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, if you have Social Security, if you're going to get it, or if you have it, and you're not sure what's going to happen, it is taxable, is it not?
Depending on your income level, up to $25,000 of other income, generally Social Security is not taxed, but you get above that and then it starts becoming taxable. Up to a maximum of 85% of it is taxable.
Give us a specific example, could you?
All right. So if somebody has $100,000 of other income, then they will end up, I believe, at that level, 85% of it will end up of Social Security will also be added into that $100,000 and taxed.
I see.
At whatever the rates are at that level, yes. And the concept is that overall contributions for Social Security are probably about 15%. Mm-hmm. So the government figures, well, then you should pay tax on the rest of it if you can afford to.
I see.
So that's That's the theory by which they do that. Other retirement income, unless it's from a Roth IRA, is going to be 100% taxable when you receive it.
Would you explain the Roth IRA and how does that apply to someone who may be thinking about trying to prepare for retirement before, you know, next month, let's say.
Right, okay.
Or 2 months from now.
Okay. A Roth IRA is a vehicle where you put money away. It's after-tax money, but it earns income, and when you have it distributed to you, it comes out all tax-free if you meet the requirements. So you have to be over 59 and a half. You need to have had a Roth for at least 5 years. But then all the income comes out tax-free as well as the contribution that you put in. Now, there are limits in terms of putting contributions in while you're employed, and they are the same basic limits as for an IRA, and you can't contribute the same amounts to both. You either you take part IRA and part Roth IRA or all Roth IRA, but you're using basically the same limits.
I see.
But you can do conversions from IRAs and other retirement plan funds into a Roth IRA. But when you do that conversion, the income, the money that you do put into the Roth is taxable income in the year in which you contribute it. So that requires some planning in terms of what is appropriate and how much tax you can afford to pay, because you're going to need to take money from another source to pay that income tax.
If someone has an IRA, now that's to be distinguished from a Roth IRA. What are the distinguishing factors?
Okay, on a regular IRA, you get an income tax deduction for the money that is put in, assuming that you qualify. You can't have another retirement plan that you're contributing to, but others.
I see.
You know, if you've got that, then you can go ahead and contribute to the IRA.
But let me ask you this. If you have a retirement plan with your employer,
right,
can you then also contribute to an IRA?
You can, but you can't get a tax deduction for it.
Oh, I see.
So it's you're putting in after-tax dollars, and that then is not taxed as income when you pull it out because of the after-tax dollar effect. So that then requires keeping track of how much either pre-tax money you're putting in and post-tax money you're putting in so that when you do retire that or start drawing the IRA that you're not paying tax on what you shouldn't be. So that is required there. But all drawings out of a regular IRA are generally taxable unless it has income tax basis. And that's compared to the Roth IRA where the money that comes out if you meet the distribution requirements, which is at least 59 and a half and had a plan for 5 years, then the money that's coming out is not taxable. Either the money you put in, which it was after tax, or the earnings on the plan come out tax-free.
There's something about when someone reaches age 70 and a half. What is that?
All right. On regular retirement plans, you need to start drawing out of your plan at that age. On a Roth IRA, you do not have to start then.
Is there some percentage, minimum percentage you have to draw out?
There are tables that the IRS has created, and they come out with what are called required minimum distributions. It is based on your age, and the table provides a divisor. You take the balance in the plan at the end of the prior year, divide it by that divisor, and that is the required minimum distribution for then the current year.
And that money that you take out by that distribution, that would be taxable?
Yes.
I see. Okay. Okay. So there's no way other than a Roth IRA that you're talking about that we can avoid taxes.
Right. But if you pull it out when you're in a very low bracket,
that's better.
You might have some money that comes out totally tax-free if you're covered by if that's your only source of income, then part of it will be sheltered by your exemption and by your standard deduction or your itemized deductions or whatever you might have. So there are some things that do come out, or at least covered.
All of these things, if someone has had the good fortune of having a decent job, has built up, let's say they are eligible for Social Security, they've built up Social Security. All of this, though, with the complications you're talking about, some people have 401ks, they have other kinds of things, they may have a Roth IRAs, they may have an IRA. All of this really requires that you have at least a knowledgeable accountant or a tax attorney to try to take you by the hand and help you, or am I being too cautious?
No, probably not. Or a financial planner should be able to do the same thing. And sometimes if you have all of your money with one of these large brokerage firms that have specialists that deal with retirement planning, then they may be able to help you also. I mean, there would be equivalent to what you'd call a financial planner, and could give you some guidance there.
What do you consider? You've been a tax specialist, the CPA. You're still relatively young, but you've had a pretty long career where you're a very experienced tax attorney, CPA. Where do you think people are dropping the ball in either deducting things which they could but they don't? Where are we making problems for ourselves?
For ourselves off the retirement area,
whatever it may be.
Sometimes there are business expenses which people have that they don't adequately deduct for their own business, or for unreimbursed expenses of their employer. That's one area.
So in other words, if you have some expense connected with your employer, for which, and legitimately so, let's say you're driving your car on some kind of work project that you may have for your employer, and you don't get reimbursed by your employer, that could be a business expense.
Right. Now, that comes and gets reported on a Form 2106, and then that in turn gets reported as a miscellaneous itemized deduction on Schedule A. So if you are able to itemize your deductions, and assuming that you don't fall into the alternate minimum tax, which eliminates the use of those miscellaneous itemized deductions and therefore the unreimbursed business expenses, but that then is subject to a reduction by 2% of your adjusted gross income. And to the extent you exceed that 2%, all of those miscellaneous ones exceed 2%, then you do get to deduct that against your income. And so that's helpful there, potentially.
Do people do a certain minimum percentage of people also not take advantage of medical expenses that they might be able to put on their returns? Or is that something that rarely happens?
Well, people may not adequately keep track of them. I recommend to people that they keep track of all of them just in case something happens and they end up with a lot of out-of-pocket. But there is a big reduction in that. What is now happening for seniors, those that are in their 60s and older, they are allowed to use the old rate of 7.5% of adjusted gross income gets reduced off. But for everybody else, it's now 10%. And this 7.5% is phasing out for the older folks over the next few years.
That 7.5% of the
is reduced off your medical expenses, and then the balance is available as a medical deduction. So that, with taxes that are paid, charitable contributions, the miscellaneous itemized deductions, all those things get added together, and if that's more than your standard deduction, then you take the itemized deduction. Otherwise, you just continue to take the standard deduction.
The more we talk about this, the more to me it's very apparent. One needs a good either CPA or tax attorney or financial advisor.
Usually, if it's at all complicated, it does.
Unless one is a fool.
Well, right. I mean, but if you
and you're a big risk taker.
Right. If you have anything that's somewhat sophisticated, you know, unless you want to become a tax expert yourself and have the time.
And most people don't.
Most people don't. Then get help.
All right. I want to give you a chance, by the way, to call in, ask a question if you have a tax question. You're burning and trying to get the answer to this incredible tax question that you have that is going to save the day for you. Here's the number, 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. If you'd like to call in with your tax question, your comment, your concern, no crying, please. No crying on the air. we'll do our best in trying to help you get an answer. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about, which we've done for many years now, year-end income tax tips with my guest, David Hellman, who's been incredibly gracious with his time and his great knowledge about this. If you've tuned in a little bit late, he's a specialist in both tax law and estate planning, trust and probate law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, which funds this particular program. He's also a certified public accountant, and his law offices are in Marin County. And he's with us, as you may know. Look at the lines flying. Oh, boy, people have been waiting. They've been waiting for you, David. And also, we will do, I think, I've been advised by one of the fellows who, I don't think you've ever met him, Frank Adam, who's a tax attorney. He's not a certified specialist, but Frank comes here for our Call a Lawyer nights. He feels it might be wise, if we can do it, if you're available, to do our tax preparation program in February as opposed to March. So you might think about that, sure. And we'll figure out what we want to do.
Right.
But in any event, and by the way, for those of you who are interested, we are not, and I know you're going to be very disappointed with this, we are not going to do a program on Christmas. I know you're probably surprised at that. But we will do our Call a Lawyer night on December 18th, where we will have the attorneys in the conference room. And, of course, the topic will be landlord-tenant. And so we'll have a number of certified specialists in the conference room. We'll have other attorneys. And so that'll give you a chance to call in that evening, 2 weeks from now, 1-800-525-9917, if you'd like to put it down. That is, of course, the love of these attorneys who show up for Call a Lawyer. They've been doing this, some of them, for many years. I'm very gracious or very great to have them as attorneys for Call a Lawyer. Again, 1-800-525-9917. So let's do this. Let's start, if you're ready, David, let's start with Patrick. Patrick, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
David, the two questions. First one's pretty simple. I think you may have answered it earlier. If my employer just started a 401k program in the calendar year 2013, and I've maxed that out, so can I contribute to a Roth in 13 as well, my personal Roth, or no?
I believe you can. You'd need to check that. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I believe you can.
Okay. That leads me to my second question, which is really complicated. Self-directed Roth. If you've read in the news over the last couple of years, Peter Thiel, one of the founders of PayPal, and a bunch of other internet entrepreneurs have done some shenanigans where they put their stock options in a Roth when they first exercise them, when the company is pre-IPO, and then after the company goes public and their shares balloon, they're able to extract all those, you know, all that, you know, appreciation tax-free. I'm in a startup situation myself. Our company's not public. We're pre-IPO. I want to exercise. I'm fully vested in the shares I have. I wanted to exercise some of my pre-IPO options and put them in my own, you know, Schwab Roth.
Wow.
Schwab has not been able to help me with this. Do you have to be someone like Peter Thiel with his type of, you know, bankroll in terms of hiring financial consultants to accomplish this? Is it not really possible for the average layman?
Well, it is possible. There are some restrictions and issues that you're facing. One is your income may be too high in order to make a regular Roth contribution, so that's an issue. And what people do to get around that is that they then put money into another form of a retirement plan and then pull it out, assuming that they can do it without penalty, for a Roth conversion. So it may be that it requires two steps. The shares may have to end up somehow in a retirement plan that you then withdraw money from that plan to put into the Roth IRA.
Who should Patrick has some very sophisticated issues confronting him. Who would you recommend he go? And I don't mean the name of a person, but the type of
he needs some sophisticated help. Either a tax attorney who knows about these things, or a CPA who does. Or some kind of financial planner who really can help with
Patrick,
all those
do you
issues.
Do you have a financial planner or a CPA or a tax attorney?
No, but I need to get one.
You certainly do. Let me suggest something to you, Patrick. Where's your business?
I live and work in San Francisco.
Oh, do you? Okay. Let me give you the Board of Legal Specialization, both the statewide number as well as how you can, through the website, the State Bar's website, you can find out who the specialists may be in taxation in San Francisco. If you want to call the Board of Legal Specialization, it's 415-538-2100. Or if you prefer to go to the Internet, go to the State Bar's website, www.calbar.ca.gov, and then look to the left margin for specialists. And if you click that on, you'll be able to find out who in San Francisco are the specialists in that particular area, if it's taxation that you're looking for. I think with your kind of, you're obviously on the road to wanting to be a billionaire. I can tell.
I can tell by the sound
in your voice, Patrick.
I want to work the rest of my life.
Listen, I'm just kidding. Yeah. But you know, you need to make an investment here of money that's going to count for you in the future. So I highly recommend that to you.
Okay.
And thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Nice to talk to you. Good luck. And when you are really successful, I want you to make a major contribution to public radio.
Will do.
Okay. Thanks, Patrick. Let's do this. Before we take any more calls, there are some people who, let's say, are self-employed, or some businesses, small businesses, where perhaps before the end of the year they might want to buy some equipment. They might want to, maybe they need a bigger vehicle, or they need computer equipment or whatever it is. Could you take a couple of minutes and talk about what is the problem happening by the end of the year, and why should they think about this seriously?
Right. Okay. The current provisions in the tax law under Section 179 that allow more than a $25,000 deduction for equipment acquired is expiring at the end of the year. And so unknown whether that'll be extended or not. It may be extended retroactively or into next year. But we know under current law that it is expiring. So if somebody does need a big piece of equipment, or a vehicle that's over 6,000 pounds, or a truck, whatever, maybe best to buy it this year if you want to be able to write off most or all of that equipment right this year.
As a legitimate business expense.
Now, that applies for federal. California has had the $25,000 limit, and that's what it's stuck with over the year.
Okay.
And the bonus depreciation provisions of the law are also expiring at the end of this year.
What does that mean, the bonus depreciation?
Well, they allow you more depreciation. Normally, you know, there's been an option between 179 and the bonus depreciation, and one or the other may do better for you. But in this instance, both of those, the excess 179 over the 25,000 and the bonus depreciation are all expiring as of the way the law reads right now.
And certainly this isn't going to be changed before the end of this year.
Unlikely.
If they change it at all.
Right.
I mean, it's December 4th right now.
Right. It would require a bill passed by both houses of Congress and signed by the president, and whether they all get their act together that fast is...
They don't seem to have their act together right now. The Affordable Care Act, with all the problems that President Obama is facing, I can't see much harmony here.
Right. Well, I mean, they were able to, at the beginning, on January 1st of this year, they were able to pull together this tax act, but they were under the crunch to do that.
Yeah.
So they can if they have the political will, but not likely that they will have the political will to do all that.
Yeah, I doubt that they will. Let's do this. We have a couple more minutes before we end the statewide version of the program. Bill, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, thanks. Great. I'm happy to speak with both of you. I have a much less complicated question, I suspect. I've been self-employed all my life. I've never had an employer. And I'm wondering, how would I go about setting up a Roth or a regular IRA? I mean, do I do that through a credit union, through my bank? How exactly, for somebody like me, would I go about doing that?
Good, very good question.
Right. Well, and you also have more options than just the 401k and the Roth. You do have the option of a KEO plan or a SEP IRA. There are a few other options. So what I would suggest you do is consult with either a financial planner or a CPA or a tax attorney who can give you a direction there. Most banks will set up IRAs for you. You need some institution that will administer a 401k.
Will a bank?
Rarely will they do that because there is a lot of paperwork involved with a 401k administration. You also, you can set up a KEO plan where you are your own trustee and administer that. So you'd need somebody who could set that up for you.
Mm-hmm.
There are other options and whatnot, but I would suggest starting out with somebody who can give you the guidance and make a decision then on what you want to do. And you're going to want to do this before December 31st.
Bill, stay on the line if you would. We've come to the end of the statewide version of the program, but for those of you who listen to the program live in the Bay Area or live on the internet at www.klw.org, we will continue. It is right now about 7:28 and a half, or actually, depending on which clock I look at, it could be 7:28, could be 7:28 and a half. I'm not sure which it is. This is 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. We're doing our usual end-of-the-year income tax tips with a great guest who's David Hellman, who's joined us on this. David, how many years do you think we've done this? Do you have any calculation on this?
Not really.
It's close to 10 years at least,
at
I
least,
think.
I think yeah, at least 10 years.
At least. David Hellman is a specialist in both tax law and estate planning, trust, and probate law certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. He's also a certified public accountant. His offices are in Marin County. I want to give you the phone number here again and invite you to call in and ask questions. 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. We will, whether you are in the Bay Area or are listening to the program on the internet at www.klw.org, that's the phone number to use if you have a question, a comment, a concern. One of the things that we do, if you're not familiar with Your Legal Rights nor familiar with David Hellman, we every year also, usually it's been in March, we will do a preparing your past year's income tax return to be filed, of course, by April 15th or whatever the appropriate date is. If April 15th falls on a weekend, it would be not April 15th, obviously. But we do that, have done that for many, many years in March. I think this year, and David and I are going to have to figure this out, I've been recommended to do this, frankly, in February to give people more time. But what we do with that is we have the CPA Society, California CPA Society, CPAs join us at the station here. KLW in the conference room so that you not only hear what David is talking about, but you can actually off the air call in and talk to the CPAs off the air and get some tax advice from them. I am thinking, frankly, as I've discussed with you, David, very, very briefly before we went on the air, I am thinking that maybe with our year-end tax tips that I might try to get the California Society of CPAs to have some CPAs come, and when we do this, whether it's November or December, have them in the conference room also, so people really have a chance, because I see all the lines are lit here. So people are concerned about this. All right. So in any event, did you take care of Bill, or was there more that you wanted to say to him?
I pretty much finished, I think, unless he has a further question.
Does that help you, Bill?
Yeah, that does help me. Yeah. It does. Yes, yeah. Very much. Thank
well, good
you.
Good luck to you. Good
well,
luck
thanks,
to you.
Guys. I appreciate it.
Very glad you called. All right.
Thank
we've
you.
Got we've got Kevin. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Hello. How are you folks doing?
Okay. How are you doing, Kevin?
Great. Pretty good. I just had a specific income tax question.
Sure, go ahead.
So I'm fully employed, but on the side, I work for one of these new ride-sharing companies called Lyft. So I don't know, are you folks familiar
when
with
you say you, what do you do for this ride-sharing company?
So it's a new form of transportation.
Do you drive the car?
I drive the car, yes.
I see, okay. All right.
So yeah. So I receive there's an app that matches me with other folks, and I drive them around, and then I'm compensated for it. The Lyft app calculates how much they owe me, and I'm paid for that on a weekly basis through Lyft. So this is income I'm receiving. I will get a form that states how much income I got, but there's no tax taken out of it. Mm-hmm. And I operate the car myself. It's actually my personal vehicle.
Yeah.
I guess my question is what kind of deductions or things should I be thinking about as I operate this vehicle sort of in lieu of, I guess, as a business expense?
Okay. The the major item is obviously your car, and you're allowed alternative ways of taking expenses for that. You can either do it on a per mile basis, which for this year is 56.5 cents, and that is in lieu of other types of expenses, or alternatively you could take actual costs based on the percentage of use that you're putting for this occupation. So yourself
versus his personal use of the
right.
vehicle.
So you take
non-business.
Whatever the, right.
Okay.
You take all the expenses, and you can take depreciation also. So that would include the gas, the repairs, insurance, those things, mm-hmm. and the depreciation, as opposed to the 56.5 cents.
Because the 56.5 cents per mile is supposed to include all of these different things, depreciation, gas.
That's correct.
Maintenance, all of that stuff.
Yes.
Insurance, et cetera.
Right. So that's one thing. Now, you are self-employed. From what I'm hearing, you will receive a 1099 MISC form that shows how much you've received, and it'll be under the category of non-employee compensation. So the government will expect you to be reporting all that on a Schedule C. Then you will deduct the auto expense if you have any other kinds of costs. For instance, use of your cell phone. A portion of that is obviously related to this business because you have the app, and that's probably your communication vehicle with the company. You may have some other expenses related to all this. I'm not sure exactly, but my sense would be that you would keep track of everything you think might potentially be deductible and then let whoever prepares your income tax return make that decision.
Okay, so... Because, one of the classic examples is if I fill up my tank with gas, but I only use half of it while I'm lift driving, the other half is a personal expense, how do you show that breakout? So you would recommend having a professional tax preparer kind of
right.
make that call as to what percentage to declare.
And you do need to keep a log of your mileage. That's very important. That's one record that you're going to need, because that's going to tell you the total miles that you've driven as well as the miles you've driven for this, for Lyft.
You know, and Kevin, with respect to what I think you can do, because I do it to some degree myself, you can have a little notebook in your car, in your glove compartment or wherever you want to keep it. And what you need to do, I think, is determine what kind of gas mileage are you getting on your vehicle. And then you note down the miles that you are driving with respect to the ride sharing. And you can figure out, actually, with the number of miles that you're driving and how many miles to the gallon you're getting, you can actually figure out what your expense is with respect, at least, to the gasoline. You follow me?
No, absolutely. I have been keeping a log, actually, with that and, you know, receipts for things like car cleanings and things like
that.
Oh,
yeah. No, that's good.
But this being such a new, I guess, form of regulated transportation, this will be my first year having to deal with exactly how to handle this income.
Hmm. Well, very interesting. Okay, does that help you?
That answers all my questions so far.
Good.
So thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling, Kevin. Take care. All right, 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. David Hellman is here, and we have Reza. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Good evening. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Of course.
It's such a wonderful program and donating your time. My quick question is, I had the great fortune of getting married this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So it's the perennial question of single versus joint. Is there a standard answer, or I imagine the answer is it very much depends on the income and the expenses and the deductions of each individual. And
does your wife work?
Yes, she does.
Ah, yeah. If you're married, you don't have the choice of filing single. You have the choice of filing married jointly or married separately.
Okay.
Probably, you know, 95 to 99% of the time it comes out better to file married jointly, but that is a calculation that most tax software will actually calculate for you, whether it's better to do it filing separately or jointly. There are certain things that you can't do when you file separately. And so it depends on other factors related to your income and types of deductions. But as I said, most of the time it makes most sense economically to file jointly.
Okay. And how about the bridge year, the year you get married? So
the year you're married, then you become, if you're married at the end of the year, then you have to file as a married person. That's the test. So at 12/31, if you're married on 12/31, at that date, then you have to file married, either jointly or separately.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Reza, take care. Bye-bye. Carol, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a retirement question. I was just figuring this out, about 5 different sources for retirement income. I'm 68 now, and I haven't taken money out of any of them. When I hit 70 and a half, I have to take money out. And my question is, do I have to take money out of each one of them, or do I have to take money out of a percentage of the whole?
That's a good question.
Quick answer is it's a percentage of the whole. If you had 4 or 5 IRAs, for instance, you would only have to take it out of one as long as you took out the total required minimum distribution from all of them.
Very interesting.
So you can pick and choose where it's coming from. Huh. Now, if you have an employer-sponsored plan, they may force you to take it out of their plan, so part of it may be coming to you whether you want to take it out of that plan or not. But if they're all under your own control and direction, then it's just a function of taking the required minimum distribution from one or more of the plans.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Okay, Carol, thank you very much for calling. 1-415-841-4134 for Your Legal Rights. And we've got, we have Robert. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how's it going?
Very good so far.
I have a question about retirement, but it's kind of specific, so I don't know if you guys can help or not.
We'll try.
I work for the school district, but I'm not credentialed, so I'm support staff, and I just turned 60, and I'm hoping to work maybe another 10 years, but I'm eligible for a pension through City Retirement and Social Security, and I'm determined to take Social Security at 62, despite all the people that say, don't do it, don't do it.
Why are you determined to do that?
I can't live like this anymore.
Oh, okay.
But
you've been living poor, huh?
But not retire. To continue working so that I can increase my social, you know, during those years that I'm working and collecting the partial and all that stuff. So I just wondered if your guest had any comments about that and, I don't know, the City Retirement Plan. And
So you're working as a staff person for the San Francisco School District, are you?
Yes, and I've been since 1981.
Have you? Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I like the job. I really like
good.
It.
Good. And the pension that you will get from the school district, when will you get that? When do you expect to get that?
When I retire.
So you're
technically eligible already.
Are you? But you want to work another 10 years.
I do.
And
I want to build up that pension as much as possible.
Sure. And do you expect any problems with your being able to stay employed up until age 70 with the school district?
You know, I hope not, God willing.
Well, I mean, there are some laws that talk about, you can't discriminate against someone.
I'm not that worried. I mean, I'm in good shape and I'm good. Dynamic and all that stuff. So I think it'll work out. But, I just have questions. For example, but they're pretty specific about Social Security. I don't know if
let's see what David has to say.
All right, well, the biggest issue you're facing is that there is a limit on how much earned income you can have while you're drawing Social Security until you reach the normal Social Security retirement age.
Which is what?
66.
66.
Right, yes. Yeah. So if your income is... If your income is over the $15,000, then you will end up paying back money to Social Security. So that's a calculation you need to work through, and it may be that you can't draw it without
and
keep
it. On the internet, it says that you just collect like a certain number of months towards the end of the year.
Right. So, I mean, you might get part of it, but you're not going to get all of it.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope. Get almost half of it, judging by what I can calculate. But then they say that when I reach 66, the monthly amount would increase. I would think it would increase based on the money that was deferred, and also that I was continuing to put in for the last.
Right. It's totally recalculated. In fact, it's recalculated every year that you put extra that you have earnings that are contributed to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's my plan, and I don't know if anyone or many other people are in this position. It's not as bad as I thought it would be, but it's tricky, and, you know, you have to make various decisions. But I like working, and I like the job, so I want to keep working, but I just can't afford the relatively low salary. Living like this is crazy.
Well, what a shame. What a shame.
My decision to start at 62. Now, do you know, I just am asking a guest one specific question.
Yeah.
When I turned 62 towards the end of 2015, then for those 4 months, would I get full amounts because it's only 4 months of that year, September, October, November, December?
Well, my sense is you need to contact Social Security Administration at the beginning of the year in which you're going to turn 62 and let them know what you want to do and have them tell you the mechanics.
Yeah, they will do that.
They will do that. I mean, one of the issues you have is that there are rules right now, but 2 years from now the rules may be different.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's important that you let them know when you're at the age of 62, what you want to do and have them work it out with you.
And also, all this talk in the news about pensions and states and cities attempting to control and, quote, reform their pensions. I mean, I was always told that this particular pension plan is a really good one, or really, you know, based well financially. Can I count on it, or do I have to worry about that?
Well, your employer has created a contractual obligation with you about your retirement benefits. So that generally is legally enforceable. New hires, they are tending to change. What just happened in Detroit, we heard on the news today, is that a federal judge said that if the, since the city has filed bankruptcy, that pensions are one of the one of the liabilities of the city, and they are up for possible reform that the judge would look at. So as long as your employer doesn't go bankrupt,
And we hope the San Francisco School District does not go bankrupt.
Right. San Francisco doesn't go bankrupt.
So we have to.
I'll take anything else off the air if you want to discuss the issues that I brought. But I really appreciate you guys.
Okay. Very good.
You.
Robert, again, for you, I realize you are on obviously limited income from the sound of it, and would like to have a greater kind of, not necessarily lavish life, but something a little bit more comfortable. I really believe there's a lot to one trying to sit down with a professional. I take it you don't have an accountant, Robert?
I don't, but I have sort of an unofficial financial advisor who's a man.
Uh-huh.
He's really good with stuff.
Well, I think you need to spend some time and to sit down and talk about the practicalities of this and help yourself to understand that.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're very welcome, Robert. How much time might it take, generally speaking, and I don't know that this is a fair question to ask you, David, for Robert to sit down with someone who's knowledgeable and discuss these issues? Are we talking about an hour, 2 hours?
Probably a half hour.
Half hour?
Yeah.
So here he is. You know, right. Here he's.
And Social Security Administration is very helpful, and they can provide that fairly easily.
Yeah.
I mean, again, the issue is the law is and the regulations are what they are now.
Yeah.
What they will be in 2 years.
We don't know. So you need to do some homework, Robert, with your friend who's a financial advisor, and I think you should take a trip to the Social Security office close to you. I don't know if they take reservations for you to come in. But you can inquire about that. There's an 800 number, I think, that you can call.
There's also a lot of information online.
Yeah, on the IRS website.
The Social Security
website. I'm sorry, I meant the
website,
Social Security website. All right, let me do this again. For those of you who are interested in finding out who your certified specialist may be in any one of the 11 fields I mentioned at the beginning of the program, you can either call the Board of Legal Specialization, 415-538-2100, or you can go to the State Bar's website, which is www.calbar.ca.gov, and go to the left side of your screen and look at what it says, Specialists, and click that on, and then you can find out in wherever you are who the certified specialists in any one of the 11 fields we've talked about, who they are in your area. Also, I want to let you know this, that support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. And for a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. The cost for the half an hour consultation through the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco is $35. Doesn't go to the attorney, goes to the Lawyer Referral Service to help them keep this going. If you are in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a Lawyer Referral Service. You can call your own, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149, and tell them what the problem is, and they'll do their best to find someone who's experienced for you to meet on a half an hour consultation. And this applies, by the way, in every county in the state of California. Every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service, and you can do that in your own area. Half an hour consultation. Most of the lawyer referral services range in cost for half an hour consultation from $25 to $35. It's a great way to get some very basic information. All right, for your legal rights number, in case you'd like to call in, it's 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. And Martin has just brought into the studio here, if you want to contact Social Security by phone, And thank you, Martin, for doing that. Martin's very efficient in terms of helping me on the program. Here's a toll-free number that you can call and find out how you can where your local office is and whether or not you can make an appointment. It's 1-800-772-1213. That's toll-free, of course, 1-800-772-1213. And you can also call 1-800-772-1213 to use their automated telephone services to get recorded information. So that's something that I think can be very helpful to you. If you're deaf or hard hearing, you can call their toll-free number 1-800-325-0778, 1-800-325-0778, between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday through Friday. So that's something available to you, and it's a great service that is performed. You don't have to pay anything to the Social Security office to get information. It's very helpful. All right, so we've got, let me see, who do we have left? We've got Jack. Jack, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thanks for taking a call.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, I opened an HSA account maybe 8 or 9 years ago.
What does that mean?
A health savings account.
Ah, okay.
And I did it when I was self-employed and under paying into my own high deductible insurance premiums. And I'm since a W-2 employee. And I'm basically just trying to find out how I can utilize the HSA. I haven't paid much attention to it. It's not a huge amount of money in it. But I've been keeping my receipts, both from when I was, my medical receipts, from when I was self-employed and also while I've been a W-2 employee. And I'm trying to figure out if I can deduct from my HSA utilizing both sets of receipts. And then second question is, how do I have to address this? If I do draw from my HSA, what are the tax implications?
Okay. There are also changes coming about with the HSAs under the new Affordable Care Act. But one of the things you're going to want to do is to try to get as much out. You can get it out tax-free if you basically don't pull out more than what your expenses have been, and they have to have been unreimbursed. They have to, if you have taken them as an itemized deduction as a medical expense, then
You can't do that.
Right. You're going to end up recognizing them as income then to the extent you're reimbursed. And also, if your employer's insurance, if you have health insurance with your employer, then that has covered it, then you've got another issue there.
Sure.
But assuming that all these are unreimbursed, then you should be able to pull it out.
How far can you go back?
You're supposed to do it year by year year's expenses.
I see.
But
I had heard from an unreliable source that I could hold on to them and let my HSA, let the principal earn interest, obviously, and then later draw out from it. So that was the plan, but
How long have you had this account, Jack?
I think it's been about 8 or 9 years.
How much do you have in it?
Oh, it's not much. It's like $8,000.
Well, hey, that's not bad.
Well, it's
not bad at all. But it seems to me at this point, since you've been saving this for 8 years or so, and with what David had mentioned, that you're supposed to use this on a year-to-year basis, I think you need to get some advice as to what are the consequences now, since you have not used this at all in the last 8 years. What limitations do you have, and what consequences are there? Because I don't think we have right now an answer that we can give you.
Okay.
But I think, would an accountant be able to help him on this?
Well, it's possible, and we should get, a little more information to be able to do it.
Yeah. David's looking at something here, and it's not the Bible. It may be David's Bible. It's a textbook, of course.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Jack, I think it's important for you, since you have saved. This is a fair amount of money you have saved. You don't want to have a problem. I think you need to. You don't have an accountant. Is that correct?
Not really. No.
I think you need to make an appointment with an accountant. It's probably going to be a good investment for you. Find out before you go and visit an accountant by calling the accountant's office. If the accountant can advise you with respect to a health savings account that you've set up and that you've never used over the last 8 years, make sure that you just don't go in there and the accountant said, gee, I've never dealt with something like that at all.
Right. Yeah. And California, of course, does not recognize these as tax-deductible items.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
When you put money in, so it's a different treatment.
Good luck to you, Jack.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. All right. This may be the last call. Bill, this better be good.
It is, hopefully for me.
Good.
I turned 70 and a half in April of 2014, and am I correct that I have to take the required withdrawals by the end of 2014? Not necessarily.
Are you still working?
No.
No? Okay. When did you retire?
6 years ago.
Did you really? No kidding. So what do you have?
Well, the answer is yes. you've got 6 months.
As of the date I turned 70 and a half, well, I have to take it by the end of the year in which I turned 70 and a half.
Right. You've got normally, if it happened to overlap, you've got a six-month period, and if it overlapped into a prior year, but from April, you're going to hit it within that year.
Yeah.
2014.
Okay, so if I turn in April, then I have to take it by December 31st of 2014?
Well, correct.
Wait a minute. April is the fourth month.
Right, but it doesn't overlap. So as long as you get it out during the year in which turn 70
right.
and a half, you're okay.
So he can go through the full year.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, and the other question I had was if I have left a pension with a former employer for about 30 years, it's done very, very well. And I will have to, I assume, take a prescribed withdrawal from that pension also. Can I leave it with that employer, or do I have to roll it over into, say, a traditional IRA?
It depends on what that employer's plan states.
Yeah.
Okay, so they
may allow you to keep it there, but they may also, you know, they're going to end up starting to pay out to you. And that's, you need to contact them and work through that with them.
Do you have a copy of their plan, Bill?
Yeah, I also know the individual that administers it.
Yeah, well, you need to start doing some homework on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Take care. Thank you very much for calling.
Appreciate it.
I want to remind you, everybody, that we are going to do our next Call a Lawyer night on December 18th. You might want to jot down the number, 1-800-525-9917. David, it's been a great pleasure having you on the program again.
Enjoyed it.
Just wonderful. Very, so knowledgeable and such a terrific guest. David Hillman is a specialist in both tax law and estate planning, trusts, and probate law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. He's also a CPA. His offices are in Marin County. We'll have David back here either in February or March, depending on what his preference may be, when we will do preparing your 2013 tax return, everybody, with a call a CPA night that same night. Your Legal Rights staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Trusts and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, we're going to go back to the Affordable Care Act. We're going to also talk about Medi-Cal coverage. We're going to talk about immigration issues and also general immigration issues. My guests will be Ellen Wu, Executive Director of California Pan-Ethnic Health Network, Certified Specialist in Immigration Law Elise Shugal, and Bettina Rodriguez-Schlegel. Staff attorney with the Legal Aid Society of San Mateo County. I thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. We look forward to seeing you next week for the Affordable Care Act. I'm Chuck Finney.
Thank you.